are live. Welcome to the Gray Zone Sports Show. This week, I got my guest host, Ari Gold. Ari, how you doing tonight?
Great. How you doing?
I am good. The big news that everyone's been talking about, and I will get into why I wrongfully think so, but Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin, the whole mess with the Dolphins. Incognito just filed a grievance. The Dolphins are going to have to, you know, the arbitrator is going to decide whether it was legitimate or not. Start off, you know, just give me your take before I go into my whole, what most people call my crazy view.
Sure. Well, I haven't seen this news actually, so I don't know what the grievance is based on. But in general, on the case overall, I mean, I do think, you know, Incognito is mostly at fault. I'm not going to lay blame with the organization when he's a grown man and kind of should own up to the responsibility. But it does seem like the Dolphins, the organization itself kind of let things spiral out of control. I don't know if they didn't have a handle on it or they were completely unaware of it, but it definitely should not have gotten to the point that it reached. And, you know, things probably could have been salvaged if it had been taken care of before that point. I guess Incognito, again, you know, hadn't realized the effect he was having on Jonathan Martin, and, you know, Martin wasn't able to get that across either, that it had gone too far and needed to stop. But that's my take on it.
Yeah, so, I mean, that I don't think anyone is disagreeing that Incognito, what he did was wrong. There's just the question is, in context, you know, putting it into the context of where it took place, the culture that it took place in, the scenario that it took place in, you know, there has always, I mean, if you remember a few years ago on Hard Knocks with the Jets, you had scenes with Rex Ryan telling him to toughen players up, and, you know, the things that we see in Hard Knocks, which is over the time, I mean, the hazing, I don't know if you remember with the Dolphins on Hard Knocks, it was that rookie haircut, you know, and that was, and my point is, that's the stuff that's edited out. That's the PC version that we're getting of what goes on in a locker room and not what, you know, is actually going on. That's what is approved to come out.
So I think even let's say even within the context of what is appropriate behavior in the NFL locker room, and let's say Incognito fit within all those parameters of what is appropriate, if to Jonathan Martin it was still crossing a certain line, like that's where I guess maybe is the gray area. But if to him he was feeling attacked and harassed, then regardless of what is acceptable, he, you know, the line has been crossed and some action needs to be taken in order to, I mean, they aren't playing for the same team, literally. It's not like they're, you know, complete, you know, individuals in this. There should be some sort of accountability and trying to work together. So if it was generally acceptable behavior, and I think that's even questionable. I mean, I don't really see anybody outside the Dolphins locker room rushing to defend Richie Incognito as just being another guy. And the guy does have a history of crossing lines throughout his playing career in college and the NFL. And he's kind of always left where he's been under terrible circumstances. He's not really a very good person by most standards and by most opinions.
Yeah, but so, you know, here's the thing, and this has yet to come out, is at what point, like, no one knows if Incognito was told this, and then he just said, screw it, I'm going to continue to be a jerk to this guy. You know, it seems awfully convenient that a week after Jonathan Martin leaves the team, and to what all appearances say, wait a minute, I'm not going to get paid anymore, all of a sudden he comes out with these voicemails. You know, you would think that's something that he left right away and says, look, this is what's going on, this is why I left. I think that text message he sent to Incognito right afterwards is going to damn him. And that's, you know, that right away is, you know, and the fact that his lawyer, Martin's lawyer, you know, turned if all these text messages and voicemails that Incognito says he has are correct. And remember, all these things are, you know, none of it has really been substantiated. It's all, I have them, you know, and we haven't seen full context and full everything, you know, but Martin's lawyer, I think, did him a disservice by trying to spin that, you know, I'll kill your whole family thing, which is also over the top, as Martin was joking around. Well, if Martin's joking around, then that same defense applies to Incognito. I don't get why that wouldn't be the same defense. So to me, that's doing a disservice. But this is also way after the fact. The whole way this story has been reported on from the get-go is just ridiculous, you know, especially for me, for a Dolphins fan, because the story comes out, everyone's painting Incognito as this awful guy, saying action must be taken, the Dolphins suspend Martin, and then the media blames the Dolphins for suspending Martin because you're painting him as looking guilty and they should have waited. You know, it's just a chain reaction, and no one took the time to step back and say, you know, let's wait, you know, let's actually get facts and wait for this to unfold.
Yeah, well, I think you brought up two interesting points. One is something I've heard you say before about not necessarily a conspiracy, but that there's a really underlying alternative, ulterior motive by the Martin camp to label this as a bullying, and that he was kind of forced to do this in order to continue to get paychecks, even though he had kind of left voluntarily on his own. He, for whatever reasons, maybe football, he just felt the pressure and needed to step away from the game, and if he had done that voluntarily, he would be forced to, I guess, give up his game checks. But because if they're presented in this kind of manner, then he was forced to, and then he can continue pulling in his paycheck. And I haven't really seen a lot of you talk about spouting things that are unsubstantiated. I don't believe like the motive is really there, that hasn't really been proven. And I think that's a very, it's a very sketchy place to go to assume that he's coming out with all of this and he's kind of built this entire case, to make, what is he making for a game because of this? I mean, not, if
it's,
I remember, it wasn't that much.
It's about $150,000
a game?
No, it's more than that.
Like, it just,
but the point is, if you look at the timeline
of it, it didn't seem to be about the money. So, like, to jump where Martin and this lawyer kind of, after the fact, like a week later, realized, wait a minute, there's a way to save our game check because of this. Like, either they're worried about his health or they're not. And that's kind of a weird place to go. But the second place
but
was...
But then why wait a week? That's the real key, is why wait a week and why tell... Why send a text message to Incognito after you've left the team and can no longer legitimately say you're feeling bullied?
The whole thing is a very difficult position to be in. I mean, if he's going to – it obviously took him a very long time to get to this point where he felt like he needed to just leave. And then at that point, to still open up and be honest about why you're leaving, it's not so simple. Look at the backlash. Look at how you and other people are treating Martin as being somebody who cowered away from, wasn't a man enough for the game of football. And obviously he wanted to stay away from that as much as he could. And ultimately he had to admit that this is the issue at hand. But when he originally left, he was still trying to, get back to it, and he couldn't. But I think the other interesting point you made was if it's equal on one side, it's equal on the other. And I wonder if that is necessarily true. So let's say Richie Incognito, again, was within the context of appropriate locker room banter or whatever it is. And then let's say Jonathan Martin going back towards Incognito is also within the same confines of what Incognito is giving to him. But if to the individual, they're receiving it differently. So Incognito gets the taunts and the things from Martin, and they just rub off him. It doesn't even faze him. But to Martin, it really stings him and it really gets to him. Is there any justification there where, well, if it's bullying to Martin, it is bullying, even though you're doing the same action?
Agreed,
somebody,
but there hasn't been any proof that Martin said. I told Incognito I didn't feel comfortable with this for him to know to stop.
I think that's valid, right? Like, how could Incognito have known if Martin didn't take any steps to get that across? And then it comes back, people will label that on the organization. Well, the organization should have known. But again, if Martin hasn't really told them, this is bothering me, it needs to stop, then how could they have really acted on that? I think that's, And I guess that's where maybe Incognito's grievance comes from. What's the cause?
He's also trying to save his paycheck. Let's not, kid ourselves.
His
defense is going to be...
What's he claiming?
His
grievance against,
I mean, he,
that, that,
right now it's just a grievance that they wrongfully suspended him. It's going to go in front of an arbitrator, and that's where we'll make the case. Yeah. I'm assuming the case is going to be, that's the culture. Look at the context of the messages. There's no way
well,
I
do. Yeah, but they should have given him a warning or told him to back off. Nobody ever told him that, and it was all deemed acceptable, and then all of a sudden they suspended him for everything that was considered acceptable until that very moment without giving him any warning that he needed to back off. So I think that's, again, valid. I wonder, where do you think he's going to go from here? Is there any sense? Do you think that he can get another job in the NFL? Do people want him in the locker room? Like, he's a jerk to me. Nobody likes him.
You know, I doubt it. I mean, I almost want to say that if this whole storm hadn't been caused and it was just, the story had died down, it would, I would see the Dolphins even taking him back, but it's been such a backlash against him that the Dolphins definitely can't. Another team can't, because most of the other teams have played, Mr. Self-Righteous of this would never happen with us, even though,
I mean, I guess if I wanted to see go ahead.
But then it's also the way that this is being covered in that, like, we're demanding the team take an action in one way, and then when the team does take that action, the response is, well, you're then proving that it's really a problem. Well, if that's what the media pressure is, the team is in a no-win situation now, because if, let's say, this whole thing came out and they said, you know what, let's wait till we get to the bottom of this, let's keep incognito on the team, the stories would have been nothing but, how could they let this go on? They're not really investigating, they're letting him continue play. But then when you suspend him, the story is, well, you're suspending him, you're indicating that he's guilty, and also now I saw, Ross set up these committees that he announced on the Monday night game, and, everyone's saying, well, now that he set up these committees, it's indicative of the fact that there really is a locker room problem with the Dolphins. Whereas I think a lot of it is, and whether, the question then becomes whether it's justifiable bending to the pressure, but Ross sees all this, publicity saying, look, you need to get this under control. There's a problem. And he's saying, let me investigate. Let's put these committees together to see if there is a problem. Then everyone is taking that as indicative of, yeah, there is a problem, which I think it's circular reasoning right now. And a lot of it, is playing things in hindsight. To me, and then let the larger issue I have with this whole thing is football is a violent, gory game, and we all know this. We all know what the NFL has been going through with all these things, with all the concussion and the player grievances and all that stuff. And as a whole, we don't have a problem with that. We as fans, and I'll be the first to tell you, I am watching this for an entertainment value. I get that they're human beings, but that's not the aspect that we as fans are looking at them from. To me, this is my view, is it's entertainment value. We as a society has made a decision that sport in this manner is acceptable, and we're watching this, and they're going on the line. I mean, you look at the things, the injuries these guys play with, you hear the stories of what these guys went through. They play with broken limbs. They'll get fingers sawn off in order to continue play. You see the guys with full casts that, you have injuries that for a regular human being, one of our friends had this injury, they'd be out for a year and a half, this guy's going out in the second half to play a football game. I mean, so that being the case, why is the line that we're drawing at bullying in words and we're okay with it being done in action? This was Ricky Williams' point. He said, and Ricky said, I found Ricky Williams' statement very, very on the money, because he has, he was that odd personality in the NFL. He was always that oddball, the guy who left, he and his teammates hated him because he ditched them. And yet he came out and said, look, part of the problem I have, let's go back earlier, I don't think what Martin should have taken it this and that, and just because that's the culture. But there's a difference between walking away and saying, look, this isn't for me, and saying, I'm coming out and I'm blowing the whistle on this. That's also part of the reason why I think some people left to the paycheck aspect of it, is because there have been, it's a rare exception, but there have been players that walk away and say, this is not for me. And I think that was the argument, is Martin should have said, look, you know, and I know it's easy for me to say, you know, it's not my money, it's not me the one, you know, my career on the line and the money I give him, but the general mentality of it seems like NFL players was, you know what, he should have just walked away, said, look, this is not for me, and, you know, and moved on. He's throwing everyone under the bus, and I think that was the major problem. Ricky said, you know, Ricky walked away, and that was it. It's not for everyone. And to me, that you know, the larger part was, why are we okay with them putting their lives on the line, you know, not their bodies on the line each week and wrecking their bodies for the rest of their lives? The line we cross is by word. It's almost the same thing with baseball and steroids. We're okay with them doing X, Y, and Z, but when they hit a certain point of steroid, you know, however we define it, that's where the line is crossed. It's very hard. That's where the discussion becomes very blurry to me.
The line is crossed because somebody is deciding that this is going to be their career, meaning we're not deciding that the line is crossed. He's decided the line is crossed. So if he also walked away from the game saying it's just brutally too physical, it would be completely different because, again, like you said, that's part and parcel of the game, and nobody would sue football, well, in this day and age, who knows, over being too violent, but it's within the game. What about sorry, I lost my train of thought, but that's good.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I think we've it's the whole, you know, it's also to me a lot of the society as a whole projecting their values onto a culture that is just completely different from anything that we're used to.
Well, here's the thing. I think the Dolphins were trying to go that route that you were saying, whereby when they did lay off of Incognito, they didn't suspend him right away because they wanted it to be a Martin issue, not necessarily an Incognito issue, but as the details emerged, what we were hearing from people in other NFL locker rooms, that Incognito's behavior was not normal, that it wasn't just par for the course. And based on that, well, then they had to act. Not because, again, of necessarily pressure, but because of the details that were emerging and then the realization that this wasn't necessarily normative behavior, or it certainly wasn't being perceived as that. And that comes back to your point, well, maybe in context, maybe it really was within normal behavior, just we weren't aware of all the facts, like the Vegas trip. It could be that Martin originally told the guys, yeah, I'm in, let's do it, and then like a week before he backed out, but ultimately they already, you know, booked all the reservations as if he was going, and they needed his part of the pot, which, again, I think within context, I don't think anybody would think that's necessarily overly bullying. That kind of makes sense, and not waiting for that justification kind of blew it up a bit. You know, that was the main point for a while. Once this all came out, was the $15,000 they got from him, and I think it's interesting you brought up Ricky Williams as well. I think that's an interesting example because, like you said, when he left the Dolphins the first time, people hated him, but yet he was still able to come back to the locker room and produce. And you know, I don't know if you know more than I do at this point, but it seemed like he was welcome back to the locker room at some point, obviously, and if you can still play, you can still play. So I think to that note, it would be interesting to see if either Barton or Incognito could kind of come back to the locker room. If they can still play and they can do well, then nobody's really going to care. But you know, neither one of them, you know, Martin wasn't, it's not like he was right, he wasn't like a huge player at his position. Like it's kind of replaceable, maybe not. But,
well, they drafted him to be the tackle of the future, and now clearly.
Yeah, but was he accomplishing that? Was he living up to that?
No, not yet. But the, you know, they kept you know, so, talking.
Yeah,
so
if he comes back and plays well, this will all, you know, this won't affect him too much. And there might be some questions at the beginning whether or not he can come back. Ultimately, I just think we've seen time and time again in sports. no matter what kind of bridges you really burn, if you're good, nobody's really going to care.
Yeah, that I think that's definitely so. And, you know, before we go to commercial break, I'll just end off with there's a very famous story with Junior Seau, and this is years back, obviously, when Ryan Leaf, you know, people are accusing the Dolphins of, you know, making the rookies pay, it's over the top, and, you know, the amounts that they have to do. And I believe the amount here was something around $15,000 also, and this is way back when. So, you know, that's substantially more when Ryan Leaf was first drafted. So, you know, we all know in NFL practice, the one player that you cannot touch is the quarterback. They wear the red jerseys. They are completely off limits. No one would dream of touching him. Well, the veterans on the San Diego Chargers went over to Ryan Leaf and said, look, you know, we're going out to dinner and you got to cover your part of the check. And he said, yeah, that's not happening. And in the following practice, Junior Seau proceeded to light Ryan Leaf up in practice, knocked him a few times, and the whole team was just ecstatic. You know, no one, if I remember correctly, something along the line, no one helped him up. They were all, you know, the defense was ecstatic that Seau did it. So I think, you know, as much as we're trying to deny it, and players are saying, you know, it's very easy for players on other teams to come out and take the self-righteous tone of, yeah, well, this doesn't go on in our locker room, you know, because that's what everyone wants to hear. Nobody throughout this story wanted to hear the NFL players come out and say, huh, this is nothing. We do far worse to our teammates. This is how we are. That, you know, that would have just dug their own grave. So, you know, to me, when they're coming out and saying this, you know, I get that, but, it, you know, I take it with a grain of salt just because there is a high incentive for them to come out and say it. I mean, there have been stories, you know, you have guys like Warren Sapp talking after the fact, and there are stories with him of what he, you know, what he did to players. Players coming out after the fact of saying that, you know, they were hazed, you know, Cam Cleland, who just came out with the Saints, it wrecked his career because the Saints, you know, Mike Ditka made him run through the veterans, and they were beating the crap out of him with, you know, pillowcases filled with coins, and, you know, so a lot of this to me is after the fact self-righteousness, and, you know, and I want to talk about, you know, this was the next issue I wanted to discuss is, I don't know if you follow Deadspin, every so often has I think it's once a week or something like that, they get a hold of a former NFL player and said, if you knew what you knew now, would you have played in the NFL? And I think there is some sort of value to that question, but a lot of it is, you know, you can't, you know, what my opinion of a matter after the fact is not the same thing as what it is during that thing. We all cloud our you know, our history with images that actually didn't happen. We, you know, memory, we fill in on our own memory, you know, and I've read a lot of books on this, you know, the Black Swan, the Invisible Gorilla, books like that, where they've proven that our memory is not, you know, we don't see everything we think we see. So most of what our memory is our brain filling in details and context, which might not have ever happened. And, you know, we definitely don't remember everything we think we do. The memories that we have are not what took place at all. A lot of times, if you go back and look at the videos of what actually happened and what your memory of it are, it's two different stories. So, you know, all these things of asking players how it was like in their locker room, would you have ever played if you knew the things now? I don't know what to do with that. I think there is some sort of value to it and just hearing after the fact context of it, but to then project it and say, yeah, this actually gives me an indicator of what it should be like. These players, you know, after the fact, it's very easy to say something. When you're going through the thing, you wouldn't actually be saying the same thing.
Right.
Yeah, so that's pretty much all right. My take, we'll take a quick commercial. We'll come back, talk NFL playoff picture, beginning of the NBA season, and we'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minute chairs.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
What is your deal,
oh,
man?
Oh, come on, man. You've been riding me all day.
Mike, you're playing like Betty White out there.
That's not what your girlfriend said.
Oh. Baby.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Eat a Snickers. Better?
Better.
Hey!
That hurts.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Not satisfied with standard souvenir distribution, you created a device with enough kick to dislocate a mascot's shoulder.
Someone get a stretcher.
Courtside, luxury box, upper deck. Your high-powered cotton cannon makes every section the nosebleed section.
Hit the deck!
So simple, anyone can operate it. After a background check, a training course, and a five-day waiting period.
It only shoots T-shirts.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, marksman of the mezzanine, because we know you'll give us the shirt off your back at 180 feet per second.
Mr. T-Shirt Launcher Inventor.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
They come from the earth, dirty, ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving farmers.
Whoa. This ain't no romance novel. It's just a sweet potato.
Nature's Sweet Potato, now in McCain Super Fries. McCain, it's all good.
Alrighty, thank you for tuning in. We are back. Once again, you can join the show at 347-637-2306. 347-637-2306. Let's get to the NFL, the playoff picture, how it's shaping up, and the big matchup this week, Kansas City, Denver. That's going to be huge. Kansas City still sitting pretty at 9-0. Denver 8-1 would have one of the wild card spots right now, which is kind of preposterous. But the Jets with the second wild card. You've got New England, Indy, and Cincy as the other three division leaders. And Kansas City, I think a lot of people who knew the NFL a little expected a turnaround, but I don't think anyone expected this kind of turnaround.
Yeah, it's pretty wild what's going on in Kansas City. I have a sense there's got to be something with their they've got a nice schedule. They've had a nice schedule, but still the way they're winning is definitely indicative of a great team right now. I mean, they're blowing teams out, and that's what you want to see from a real playoff team. But 9-0 is pretty. I did not expect that. I did not see that coming. How do you think they'll fare against Denver this week?
The thing also, you have to watch out for Manning with the ankle. I don't think that should affect him that much, but it is definitely something to watch out for. and they are coming, the Chiefs are coming off a bye, so that will be,
right,
an advantage for them. I think the real thing, like you mentioned, the real interesting point is that they really are blowing out teams, but Denver's doing the same thing, but in a much bigger fashion. Denver has, 371 points for, 238 against, whereas the Chiefs, while they're 9-0, they only have 215 points. So they're scoring at a smaller clip, but they're still, you know, their defense is very solid. The Broncos are almost the polar opposite of their defense is not as good as it has been, but it's good enough to keep, you know, the Manning-led Broncos offense in the game and blowing out teams. So that should be, you know, I think it's whatever, you know, and obviously this goes for pretty much any NFL game, is whichever team gets the turnovers will win that. You know, it's just because, and right now both of those teams, both Manning and Alex Smith, have been very good at not throwing turnovers, making smart plays. You know, people knock Alex Smith for being a game manager. Well, you know what? Sometimes that's what you need, and you know what? If that's what wins, who gives a crap, you know?
Was this game a flex game for Sunday night, or was it always on the schedule for Sunday night? You know,
I don't believe it was flex. If I remember, it was not. They were not flex this
week.
That's
great.
It's a great Sunday night, great Monday night as well. You know, this week as well. You know, first off, you're starting like
the Panthers.
Yeah, and it's. You know, let's focus a little the Dolphins, which you know we all you know they had that awful win loss against the Buccaneers on Monday night, and the scary part.
Yeah, that's got to be a sign of things to come, right?
I don't know, because each week we've seen a different Dolphins team. You know, that's the thing, and you know, I thought it would this whole issue would be a springboard for the team, and it, you know, it still could be, but you know, it didn't show it that way. They looked very lost. You know, Sherman's offensive scheme is just haphazard at times. There's no flow to it. It's very, you know, it's very lame. And, you know, they let the Buccaneers, you know, the Dolphins took the lead late in the game and they let the Buccaneers come back and win it. There were a few stupid penalties, you know, that's, you know, the fair catch at the 5-yard line at the end of the game, you know, just boneheaded moves. But the scary part is, and the Dolphins are still in the race legitimately at 4-5, and their schedule is not easy by any stretch of the imagination, but if you look at their schedule, you've got the Chargers, the Panthers, the Jets, Steelers, Patriots, Bills, and Jets again. To me, there's two games on that you say definitively they will not win, the Panthers and the Patriots at this point. But all the others are winnable games. I don't think you come out as the Dolphins as a favorite, but it wouldn't be a major upset if the Dolphins beat the Chargers, if they beat the Steelers, who are a worse team, if they beat the Jets. You know, you split with the Jets, and the Jets right now are the wild card. That's just fine, you know. And the Jets are also one of those teams that week in and week out, you have no idea what they get, and they have just, you know, essentially the same schedule as the Dolphins. You know, they've got the Ravens and Raiders. Dolphins twice, obviously, the Panthers, the Browns as well. So, I mean, between those teams, you've got the wild card. All those wild card teams are going to play each other at some point. And I don't, you know, each of those teams each week to me are a toss-up. You know, I don't think you go into any of these teams that are in the wild card right now in the East. You've got right now, Jets are at 6-5-4. Right, that's where they are, and every you know, like I mentioned, the scary part is Denver 8-1 is the fifth seed, which is part of the ridiculousness of you know, but you've got Miami, Tennessee, Cleveland, Baltimore 7-8-9-10, even San Diego at 4-5. All those teams at 4-5, and as we just went through, all those teams play each other at some point, and to me, those teams, week in and week out, we have no idea what we're getting from any of those four teams. So this could go anywhere. A 9-7 can get a team into the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I mean, personally, the team I like in that bunch is San Diego, and the Dolphins will certainly play them this week. So if the Dolphins are going to stay alive, they're definitely going to need this one. But to me, San Diego is that, you know, they've got some good wins under their belt, some good wins where they've won by multiple scores. They don't have a lot of games where they've lost by multiple scores, only one. You know, a lot of teams can't say that in that bunch. Only Baltimore's the only one, and then San Diego's got on their side. They got some bad luck. They played 5 games that were close, and they went 1-4 in those games. You know, usually a team's going to go 500 or so, and to be 1-4, 3 games under, is not, you know, to me that indicates bad luck. So to me, I still think they're the strongest in that bunch. I don't know exactly what their schedule looks like, but You know, even last week against Denver, they played them well. It's a divisional game, and that AFC West is a tough division, but you always have a better shot when you're playing your divisional opponents, in my opinion.
I think, in a way, the Dolphins are also in a similar manner in that if you look at the Dolphins' schedule and look at their past, the Saints was the only real blowout. The Patriots are the only other team they lost in double digits to, and that was a lot closer game than you know, the Patriots wanted for comfort in the first half. So, you know, even that, the final score was 10, but it was close. The rest have been within scores. So, like I said, you know, I'm not saying they will, but that's also the toss-up. You know, the Jets, on the other hand, have had their losses, you know, just be by all their losses. You know, you have one against Tennessee by 25. You have their loss against the Steelers, who are playing woefully against almost, you know, 13 points, two full scores. You've got the Bengals, where they got blown out, too. To me, right now, the Jets are the team that are, you know, the real toss-up. Like you said, the Chargers are more of a solid team. Their games are a lot closer.
Well, the thing the Jets also have is the Jets have they still have that half game on everybody, or that full game on everybody else behind them. So that is going to help at this point. You know, the fewer games that are left, that one game is going to be a big swing game. Meaning, even going by your standards, where you said you could pretty much lock up the Dolphins as a loss to the Patriots and the Panthers, and they're 4-5 now, so that's 4-7. Then they got to win out to just be 9-7, right? So you're saying that even if they're going to win out, go 5-0 in games against teams that are a little bit worse than them, a little bit on par with them, you know, more fair to say they're going to go 50-50. So they go 3-2, they go 2-3. They're not getting to 9 wins. Is 8-8 going to be enough in that playoff spot to win that playoff spot?
I think there's a chance it is. I don't know that the Dolphins get to 8-8, but I think the Chargers could finish out 8-8 and still get in. I think there's a chance we see that pack finish at 8-8, because remember, Baltimore also has games against Cleveland left. You know, these teams, most of these teams are playing each other, which will let them obviously spread themselves apart a little. But you know, it wouldn't surprise me if you had two of those teams finish at 8-8.
Yeah, speaking of nice turnarounds, who saw Cleveland coming? I mean, I thought they were a couple of years still away from even being in the picture, and here they are, 10 weeks into the season, and they're still, you know, kind of relevant. I guess it's arguable, but that's a nice turnaround in for that organization.
The whole AFC is almost upside down in that Kansas City is at the top. You know, New England, you had them there, obviously, most people. New England's that team that you always say this year might be the year, and yet they find a way to, you know, just make you look foolish. Indianapolis, you know, is up there. I think most people or a lot of people would have had Houston in that spot. You know, that was either or, so that's really not that much of a shock, but it is still Houston is at the bottom, right below Jacksonville. You know, Jacksonville has one win, Houston has two. You've got the Steelers at the bottom. The Raiders only have three wins. I mean, the AFC is topsy-turvy, and this is almost the beauty of the NFL, is you're really week in and week out. You have no idea what's going on.
Right. And that, you know, you're 10 weeks into the season, and almost all the teams still have a chance. All the fan bases are still rooting. I mean, you're still – you still think that the Dolphins have a chance to make the playoffs. Cleveland Browns fans think they have a chance to make the playoffs. They're, because there's so few games, you know, there's always you don't get eliminated until very late.
And the scary part is the New York Giants, who started off 0-6.
Yeah.
they're 3-6 now, and they are, you know, they're not in it just yet, but they're definitely within striking range of being right back in it. And, you know, that's the scariest part, is sometimes, you know, you have these teams that are so top-heavy that, you know, could squeak in, and teams that are so bad that based on the division they're playing in, you know, have a chance of having started off so horribly, which, I don't remember having seen this in years past.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Giants are great. They win this week against a Rodgerless Green Bay Packers on a game out of their division, which is wild.
Yeah, it's definitely a little crazy, and I think with that, let's talk a little NBA just to switch gears a little bit. And the best part, you know, obviously, to me, it's way too early in the season to say anything, you know.
Why are we talking NBA?
Oh, no, because I want to bash the one people I always love, love bashing. The Knicks, who have just looked woefully awful, and their owner has come out, and I don't know if you saw the statement that their owner, James Dolan, made.
Which one is this?
He expects nothing short of a championship this year from this team. It always seems that New York teams, New York franchises, well, mainly the ones that the stupid New York fans follow, the Knicks, the Mets, and the Jets, because most of the time those are the three the people follow, these outrageous statements and just come out looking so stupid. Rex has always opened his mouth. Dolan is now opening his mouth. You've had players opening their mouth, you know, and the NBA, I think, and I think the Knicks are on the verge of maybe doing this, and I say the same thing about the baseball as well. All these seasons that are really long, in the first half of it, you can't really put yourself into it, but I legitimately believe you can knock yourself out of contention. And the Knicks are just playing so woefully bad. You know, I had them putting this straight, you know, the way they've come out on the season is you still didn't have them in your top five in the East, even, you know, putting this aside. And now just the way they play, it's coming out. And the real question is, does this affect, how will this affect the free agency that's coming up around in the offseason? Because this offseason is going to have a lot of moving parts, and the Knicks with Melo is a huge part of that. And it'll be interesting to watch. I think that's one of the storylines you watch is, will it affect Melo? Melo is the one who, you know, remember back in Denver, was, you know, basically bought himself out of the team. He kept, you know, saying, look, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. I doubt we'll see the same thing in New York, but does it get to the point where he just becomes complacent in New York and just lets his time buy out and really takes advantage of free agency, whereas other players, you know, even though the talk is, they might not necessarily.
Yes. Well, not like they are making me sad with a Knicks fan here, but from their perspective, I imagine they're thinking it's seven games into the season. They're 3-4. They're not 0-7 here, and might be a little bit too early to start worrying about that. I mean, they win a game tonight, and they're back in the fourth spot in the quote unquote playoffs. I mean, what's the concern here?
No concern. I'm just no problem knocking someone when they're down. That's all.
So tell me again, what's Carmelo's deal after this season? He's still on contract, or
he's out. He's got an out. I mean, you know, they're under contract.
He's got the same deal he signed the same.
Yeah, they all signed the same deal.
LeBron and Wade, and they all have the same. That is interesting. I mean, if they don't have it, I mean, even if they have a good season, ultimately, you're not necessarily going to compete against the Heat and even the Pacers now in the East. Unless you bring in more talent or go join talent elsewhere. So either way, I could see this being his last season in New York. I wonder how that will play out. Interesting.
Yeah, so that's the only reason I think, you know, this season, the regular season is a little more, meaningful. I wouldn't say the regular season is meaningful, but, you know, pay a little more attention to it.
As a Heat fan, you concerned at all about the Pacers? Because I'm not, but are you?
No. I mean, Miami right now, the way they're playing, you look, everyone writes Dwayne Wade off, but they forget during the 25-game win streak, I mean, he was playing ridiculous basketball. It was just towards the end when he got his injuries again, but if he's healthy, Dwayne Wade is the Dwayne Wade we saw last year. You know, people were looking, just almost wanting to believe. They're looking at the the injured Dwayne Wade and hoping that's what he is. But I think, you know, the healthy Dwayne Wade is more likely what we're going to see this year. And if that's the case, if you have these players, I mean, the depth on the Heat is really where I think they shine. It's not just relying anymore. You know, obviously they're relying on LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, but you have a tremendous amount of depth that can get you through in the middle of the season. You know, and I had this discussion with a few NBA, you know, fans who weren't necessarily, you know, haters of the Heat, but they had a sincere disdain of them. And I went through it with them and said, if you look at the Heat's bench, they could legitimately start for a good chunk in the middle of the East and be competitive. I would, you know, maybe not a playoff team, but competitive. You've got, you know, Beasley off the bench who's playing, you know, decently. Anderson, Battier, Haslam. I mean, just the Ray Allen. You know, obviously there's a reason they took bench roles with the Heat in addition to the you know, the championship aspect. There is a little bit, you know, out of their tank, and they wouldn't necessarily be starters, but you can make the argument for them starting all the teams, and this depth is just going to help them. And, you know, the real wild card, obviously, we all know, is Greg Oden. If Greg Oden could be even, you know, half of what he was, the beauty of Greg Oden, and it's the same thing, you know, as Eddie Curry a few years ago, if you remember. Eddie Curry was that guy that you signed with the tremendous upside, and you know, let's say what it never panned out, but there was absolutely no downside to signing him. The same thing with Greg Oden here too. I mean, Greg Oden essentially has become a non-story. Most people, for you know, if he would have went to another team, the whole focus would have been on when's he coming back, when, you know, why isn't he getting minutes, how's his, you know, progression. When you're talking about the Heat right now, the only mention of Greg Oden is a wild card, not whether, you know, why is he not back, why is he not this. That's the real intriguing part to me. And even without Oden, you're still ridiculously deep with the depth of Battier, Allen, Anderson, Rashawn Lewis is playing solid, Beasley, you know, Norris Cole off the bench. So that's really why I don't worry about any other team in the East, is because Miami, the starting, you know, the big three and their starting five in general, and then add that the quality of their bench to it. It just, you know, that to me is why they take the championship again.
Let's go for four. I'm ready. Let's go for four. Let's put this one in the books and let's just move on to next year.
And and it's crazy that, you know, as much as people were bashing the whole thing, at the end of the day, the Heat have been to the finals every single year that LeBron's been on the team. They took, you know, people made it sound like they didn't make the playoffs that first year. They were just awful. They took a very good Dallas team to six games in the playoffs. I mean, I remember it was ridiculous how much people were jumping through hoops to try to apologize it away, the fact that Miami made the finals and went deep, you know, and now you're every year in the finals. Spoelstra's got to go. Bosch has to be traded. You know, the whole, you know, we all remember it. And at the end of the day, this is going to go down in history as the most successful experiment, you know, in NBA history. You know, expecting something, you know, having expectations of some sort going into it, and those expectations being fulfilled pretty much exactly, except for the first year loss, but you still made the finals and went deep and 2 years in a row.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Wade and that he still got it and that we shouldn't write him off yet, but at some point in this, I guess, experiment, he won't have it. And again, maybe you'll come back with, well, why I think that he won't. But at some point, I would think that he won't, and he will phase out. And then the question is, who's going to step up and take his spot? And will LeBron even need anybody else to really step up in that spot? Meaning, he's got enough role players. Does he need another superstar at that point to really take it to the next level? Or can he still win, you know, having guys like Bosch or even a step down Wade, you know, or whoever comes? I don't know. It'd just be interesting to see the format of the team. Like right now, they are so deep. And you list the guys on the bench and you know, Allen and Battier, just like you did. And there is no concern yet. But at some point, you know, I just think it's going to be interesting to see how long they can keep it together, keep this level of success, and what those different pieces are going to be. Because once you have LeBron, whatever you put around him should succeed at this point of his career, you know? And he's only getting better. So maybe what he had in Cleveland wasn't enough to make it to the finals. But at this point of his career, what you put in Miami doesn't necessarily have to be, Wade and Bosh at the top of their game. So it's exciting. I don't know.
To me, my feeling on the free agency this year is if the season goes the way that people expect it, even if it's not a finals victory, but a deep playoff run, a finals run, to me, LeBron re-signs a 3 or 4 year deal in Miami. He's really at the top of the world right now. The Cleveland story, I don't know that he wants to go through that circus again, because if he goes back to Cleveland, it becomes a circus again. If he stays in Miami, it's not as much of a story. So, and obviously all this is pure conjecture. You would just assume, right. There's not much for him to be gained by going to Cleveland. He's at the top of the world right now, literally. He's undoubtedly, unquestionably the best player in the NBA overall. Maybe not the best pure shooter, but, overall, he's hands down the best player in the NBA. Everyone recognizes that pretty much now, except for the few pundits who are still making their money off of saying otherwise. But as a whole, people are recognizing it, even if it's begrudgingly. He's being associated very much with the Heat. The franchise will always be, in a way, Dwayne Wade, just because of the history that we have with them. But I think South Florida as a whole, the fan base, has definitely embraced him just as much as Wade. And, he seems to like it down there. Miami is one of the major markets. Cleveland would not be a market like that. People downplay it, but there is what to be said about coming back in the winter months to a place, to a city like Miami as opposed to Cleveland. I mean, players have said that. There is what to be said about walking off that plane after a long flight and getting off in Miami as opposed to Cleveland. Obviously a personal thing, but, there are a lot of good that Miami has. The Heat organization is hands down just a top-notch organization. They a lot of the players who play there end up inside the front office in an organizational role at minimum. They have former players, Alonzo Mournings, basically Pat Riley's right-hand man. You have a few former players on the assistant coaching staff. So, I think there's so much going for LeBron with Miami that to me he re-signs there. Wade is going to, he's going to start, taking a step back. He's also a few years older than LeBron. He's had more surgeries, more injuries that he's dealing with. But I think that second tier Dwayne Wade with LeBron at his prime will be good enough. LeBron keeps saying, there's aspects to his game that he's improving, which is mind-boggling. You're watching him, putting aside, the hatred bias. It's like, what else could this guy do? And he's saying, there's more I'm adding, there's more I can do. So we haven't seen the best yet. He's got a few years for sure left in his prime. And those players, part of what draws these bench players, the depth of the bench players, is to be a part of this. And so as long as he's, on this team, I think you will have that sort of depth just by osmosis almost, because players towards the end of their career, like a Ray Allen, these type of players who, maybe it's a player that's looking for a ring, maybe it's a player that already has enough that, he feels established and just wants to go along for the ride once more. That's really, that team with LeBron will have the depth and will allow him to continue to grow. I don't think there's a concern that, there'll be a point where the depth goes away. And also, let's not, they've got the best closer in the NBA in their front office of Pat Riley, and saying, look, Riley has convinced more than his fair share, and he's had failures too. I'm not painting him as this, almighty God, although he's pretty close when it comes to basketball and all the things he's done. He's had his failures too. But as a whole, players are flocking to this organization for one last shot. And if LeBron resigns and they continue to winning, I don't see that changing.
Yeah, Gamo, the mind that I would love to see. I do think it's important. It would be nice for his legacy and as a person if he does wind up, you know, back in Cleveland and winning rings.
Oh,
so to me, that would kind of sort
I think he will at the end of his career after one more contract
in
Miami.
Yeah, so I don't know if it'll be a full contract. To me, though, I don't see him walking away after a three-peat. Like, the chance to always make history and do something different and be the first one, you know, or to get the four, you know, something that Kobe didn't do, something that Jordan didn't do, you know, to get four straight. To me, that I think keeps him in Miami at least another year. And I don't know exactly the contract situation. You know, if he would have to re-sign at the end of this year, he's got to re-sign something where he can just go, you know, take it year by year at that point.
I don't think these guys, you know, these guys, you know, I would say three or 4 year deal, you know, probably a similar type of contract that he signed just now, a 3 year with a player option, you know, and then take it from there.
Gotcha.
You know, that
is, again, I still think that will be interesting. Like, standing from here, you know, it just feels like with Dwayne Wade's career, like, what's going to happen to Dwayne Wade? At some point, is he going to walk away from the game, or is he going to keep going until he's, I don't know, Juwan Howard, you know? I mean, is he going to go so he can't play anymore, or is he going to be able to step away? Meaning, and maybe it's not fair to keep throwing him down and under, but it just feels like the way his career is going, that he you know, the wheels will come off at some point, and then what's going to happen? You know, because...
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen exactly with Dwayne Wade. You know, it could be he could become one of those older players that you know, just keeps going somehow. The Heat definitely has room for that, especially if you have LeBron. You can use Wade creatively. I don't know that there's a need really to force him out or, you know, or anything, and let him make that decision. Hello? Are you with me? All righty, there you are. Hello?
Yeah,
how's it going? Yeah, so Wade, I don't know. I don't know. That'll also be an interesting thing to see, you know. Sorry about that. But if Wade has a healthy season this year, a full season, then this conversation almost becomes moot for another few years because, you know, we'll be singing the opposite tune again of, yeah, Wade's got another stretch in him, and they're going to sign together and keep it going together with the big three. And Wade's made it very clear that he's going to stay with the Heat. I'm pretty sure Bosch has made similar sentiments, and if people are following, LeBron pretty much has said everything you want him to say except for I'm going to stay. You know, for me as a fan, I am fine with the way he's approaching it. He's basically said every indication is I will stay here. I'm just not committing myself one way or the other, which is just a smart move. So, you know, that to me as a Heat fan, nervous. I don't know if nervous is the right word that he might leave. It's a possibility. I don't think it's an absolute certainty that he stays, but I'm fairly confident that he does.
Yeah, I mean, I think he likes to be comfortable also, and security is huge. And, you know, it's only been 3-4 years. It's not really time to shake the boat so much, you know. Things are going well. I feel like he probably wants a little bit of consistency. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's definitely going to
be a long season.
Jeez. Oh, yes.
Be a long
basketball
season.
Is always long.
Yeah.
And it's... Yeah, you're going to get these games that are, you know, you think it's long now. Wait till another 2 months when we're saying, when the heck are the playoffs coming? Ari, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining me this week, and looking forward to having you on again.
Yeah, thanks so much. You've been blessed.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up. Thank you all for tuning in. Till next time, this has been the Gray Zone Sports Show. Adios.